interview with Paul F. Foligno of Northville. Taken in his office on Center Street, where he has a State Farm insurance agency. Mr. Foligno, would you tell us about your background?
My name is Paul Foligno. I was born right here in Northville. In fact, I was born on East Main Street, where above the building that was owned by Manufacturers National Bank, it's actually above the Carl Johnson Real Estate Office. My folks lived there with a great aunt of mine for several years until they bought their first home. My parents' names were Louis and Josephine Foligno. My wife's name is Mamie, and her former marriage name was Guerrero. She's originally from the Garden City area, although she was born in Highland Park. I have two daughters. One daughter, the oldest one, Teresa Ann. She is now 29.
That's a few.
And my youngest daughter, Paula Marie, is 22.
And then, where did you move from the location on East Main Street? Do you recall that?
Sure. We moved to 353 East Katy Street. That's where we lived for many years until, as a matter of fact, 1936 is when Dad bought a home on South Center Street at 254 South Center. And I lived there until, of course, I was married. And that was in 1950. And for just a few months after our marriage, we rented a place in Garden City until an apartment here in Northville was ready. And then my wife and I moved into that apartment here in Northville, which was at 132 East Main, over above the Northville drugstore. We lived there for approximately, 53. And then we bought a home at 350 East Katy Street. That was the first home that we purchased. We lived there until 1964, and we purchased a home on South Center Street. That was at 210. That house is now gone. When the city bought the property for the parking lot there, I moved that house out on Portis Road near the corner of 5 Mile Road, and that still remains out there.
What was the purpose? Moving that house.
I did not want to see that old beautiful home destroyed.
Oh.
I didn't want to see a bulldozer hit that one. So I had bought a piece of property out there. And at that time, was when the consideration of the township and the city merging. And had that happen, I would have moved back into that home out there. That didn't turn out, so eventually I sold that home because it was in the township, and I was then on city council and had to remain in the city limits or else put up my council seat. From there, we lived there, of course, at 210 South Center until 1970. Yes, because I was elected to city council in 69. So in 1970, we built our new home, which we are presently living in, at 20556 Clement in the city of Northville.
Now, One thing we didn't ask is, what year were you born?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was born February 8th, 1929.
Thank you. Okay. Where did you go to school?
Right here in Northville. Well, this is kind of hard. I guess I've been in every building in Northville in the school system.
Well, great.
The present grade school was built in 1936. Used to be right out in front of the building. I used to read it all the time. I believe it was 1936.
Is that the one on Main Street?
It's one on Main Street, which is referred to as the grade school. And that, of course, came about as a result because our former grade school building burned down about 2 or 3 years earlier.
Where was that located?
That was located directly in back of what is now the Board of Education office, or the old high school on Main Street.
Okay.
That grade school actually faced Katy Street. After that building burned down, then for about 2 or 3 years until they were able to construct the new grade school building, we had classes in different places in Northville. One of the places that we had classes was in the old Lapham State Bank building, which was on the corner of Main and Center Street, which now houses Orange Jewelers. Right on that corner. That was one of the places I can remember, the big walk-in safe that was in that building. I don't know, it might still be in there in the back, being used by Orange Jewelers. We also went to classes in, there used to be three homes that sat to the west of our present City Hall properties or the Fire Hall, and where the community building presently sits. One of them I can still remember is being the Brockway home. And those three homes there, and let's see, there was another one, the Jarvis home, because that was Mrs. Jarvis, who was one of our first grade teachers. And she lived in one of those homes. And those homes were then either purchased by the school at that time or rented for classrooms, and we had our classes there. And then for one short period of time, we had another vacant building in town. I believe it was on the south side of Main Street, and that was used for just 1 year only that I can remember of. But the bank building was used, and the homes were used until grade school was built and then we moved into that.
That's very interesting. I haven't heard anyone tell about that or refer to a school burning down.
Oh, that was a real big thing that happened in town. I mean, that was, you know, a major catastrophe that our school burned down. And everybody just was, what shall I say, devastated by the burning of our grade school and what's going to happen to the children for their education.
Well, that must have been a frame building.
No, it wasn't. It was a brick building.
Is that right?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, it was almost identical to our present Board of Education office building here, or the old, what we call the old high school. Mm-hmm. And I can also remember that the fire escapes, and if you remember on the old high school building too, where they used to have the big tubes that would go up the side of the building. And they had little doors inside the classrooms, and in the event of a fire, you jumped into that big tube and slid down to the ground from the second story.
Uh-huh.
And that had those on that building. In fact, I can remember two of them for sure, one on each side of the building, because the ones that were on the back of the high school building and the ones that were on back of the grade school building were very close. It was just almost, I would say probably 30 feet apart because of the size of the building that was back there. for sliding down there. He used to have fire drills, and he'd love that. Inside toboggan slides.
After the school was built, when you were in the new building, how long were you there? Was that a K through 8?
No, that was K through 6. Mm-hmm. And then at that time, we had a junior high, which was in the former high school building, which was our 7th and 8th grade. And as many years as I can remember, Ida B. Cook was the junior high school teacher. She was the principal of the junior high also. And she taught math classes. And she was just an absolute angel. She was good. She was firm. And everybody loved her. And we all miss her from the day that she passed away.
That's interesting. And then for high school?
Then for high school, it was in the same building. That was 9 through 12. And I graduated with a class of 1947. As a matter of fact, last year, in 87, was the first class reunion we had since we graduated. It was
40th reunion.
Reunion, right.
Did you have a good turnout?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we located and had almost 80% turnout of our former classmates.
That's very good after 40 years.
Right, and we had lost, I believe, 7 of our classmates. So when we take them out and figure the percent, we had a very high.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, and talking to many of the chairmen, of other class reunions, they were just absolutely shocked that we had that big a turnout. There was only, I believe, 3 or 4 people who we totally could not locate.
Oh, that's remarkable.
Yeah.
So, what you're telling me is probably that a fair number of those people stayed around here. Are many of them still in Northville?
No, very few of them are still remaining in Northville. Several of them through job transfers. We had a couple that came from California, Wisconsin, Florida, Texas. They came from all around. We have, of course, several here in Michigan, from, let's say, Northville all the way to the UP. And we have another one that lives down in the Monroe area. I would say that probably a good majority of them live within driving distance of Northville. We have some who live in Livonia, and back in, so I say, our days, part of Livonia from Merriman Road west came to Northville for their high school because Livonia had no schools at that time. And several of those people who came from the Merriman and Farmington Road area, and we call it 7 Mile, because that's where most of them were in that area, still remain in Livonia. Now that group really stayed close to home.
Mm-hmm. Who can you recall who stayed in Northville proper?
Okay. I'll start out with some of those that I ran around with. David Schultz lives up on East Street. Dean Mitzel lives up on South Ely. Lorraine Rieger, married in the Steinle. Betty Esch Sutton, they're still here in Northville. The ones that just recently moved within the past few years from Northville after their retirement was the Wooten twins, Mary and Frances. And they live out in the Whitmore Lake and South Lyon area now. Charles Friedel, who has the Friedel stores here in Northville. You know, it's hard to remember.
You've done well. What did you participate in high school? Did you participate in sports?
Okay, I was very limited in my participation of sports. The first 3 years of my high school, I could not, because between my junior high and upper class, ninth grade, which was our senior high or senior classes then, I had an accident. I was horseback riding, and out at 7 Mile and Orchard Drive, the horse shied, went across the road, and we were hit by a car, and my one leg, my right leg was under the horse when we went sliding across the pavement, and to make a long story short, I was ended up with a very serious infection in my leg, and I was hospitalized and had the top of my knee carved out, and it took almost 3 years for it to heal to the point where I could, do things. Dr. Russell Atchison was my doctor at that time, and has been for, I guess, almost since I've been born.
That name comes up over and over again.
Oh, he's the greatest man that's ever lived, I'll tell you. He's just absolutely wonderful, not only as a doctor, but as a person, and a very caring and concerned doctor from the old school. His patients always came first to him. But anyway, I was not able to play any sports until the last few weeks of my junior high, and then of course I went out for basketball, but I wasn't what you'd call too good of a basketball player. There seemed to be a problem between the floor and the top of my head, which was too much weight. But the last few weeks I went out for the football team, of course, but I was not able to engage in very, strenuous man-to-man combat down the football squad. I was doing kicking, and I could kick off, I could kick for extra points, but as soon as I would kick, I'd have to turn and go away to keep from getting hit to, breaking the scar tissue up on my leg to open again. It did happen once, and it was quite a serious thing, and so I did have to be very careful. But then by my senior year, I was able to play football full time, and play my last year of high school football. Basketball. I went out for basketball again. Had fun.
Given your history of involvement in the community, I wonder if you engaged in any political activity within the high school. For example, were you on student council, or did you run for any offices of any clubs, things of that nature that would kind of prepare you for the community service that you have?
I did engage in some political activity. When Gene Steinoff was running for the Queen, I was a very staunch supporter, and several of us, we formed a little campaign committee and went around putting up signs and handing out little resumes on her to get her to be voted queen of the school that year, and we were successful in doing it because she became our queen.
That's good.
I still remember the slogan that I came up with at that time, and that was, don't be a bean, vote for Gene. I guess that kind of carried over, because one of my slogans, you might say, when I ran for local council was, get on the ball and vote for Paul. Or I'm for you, vote for me.
That's good. One of the things I was interested in the material you gave us was your involvement in the building of Allen Terrace, the senior citizen's apartment.
Yes.
Up on High Street. Would you like to tell us about the beginnings, how it came about, how it started? And then, of course, the fruition that's been up for about 10 years now.
Yes, as a matter of fact, last night we went up for the 10th year anniversary party.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. Okay, I was first elected to the city council in 1969. My first involvement with city politics was in 1961, where I ran unsuccessfully for a council seat. And they said I was just a young punk and really didn't know what I was talking about to become a councilman. So I learned, and since the day I turned 21, I have voted in every election except one school board election that I missed out on when I was out of town that day and did not get back in time.
That's a superb record.
Well,
almost perfect.
I feel bad to this day yet that I missed that school board election. And I can remember I had to go up into the Thumb area that day, and my work at that time took longer than I expected to be up there, and by the time I got home it was about 8:30, so it was too late to vote, and I felt real bad. And I made no, comments about the running of the school system that year, or for that 2-year period until the next election, because I felt if I didn't vote, I didn't have the right to criticize. And you can compliment if you don't vote, but don't criticize because you didn't vote. And so I've always had that philosophy and have stayed with it ever since. But after I was elected to council, I seen some senior citizen housing being built in Gaylord and also in Kalkaska, because at that time we were going up into that area, the summer place of Kalkaska, and we used to take quite a few drives around the area, and it was interesting once I seen the housing being built in Gaylord. So that summer especially, we drove up there several times, and I went in and talked to the city officials there as to how they were building it, how it became funded, things of this nature. And that was being funded through United States, really, through the federal government. And then they built a senior citizens complex in Kalkaska. Again, of course, I was very interested in that, and again, I went and talked to, as a matter of fact, I talked to the man who was the chairman of the building authority and complex, who was Foster McClure, up in Kalkaska, and we had several conversations about the building of that. They were getting almost like 100% funding for those buildings for the federal government at that time. So I, of course, came back to our council and said, hey, I think that, there's something going on out there that we may not be aware of. And so I explained the program. I brought pictures back of the complexes being built and explained to them, had all my notes at that time from there. And the council was not favorable at all towards the project. As a matter of matter of fact, I got some very nasty comments made to me that we don't need it, we don't want it. Our people in here are fluent enough that they don't need a senior citizens complex. And so I kept pressing the issue. And finally, after about 2 years, to shut me up, I guess, because that was a comment that was made, well, we'll shut you up and we'll get a committee going. And that was a housing commission that you had to form first of all, and then it was through them to apply for the federal funding and what have you. Out of the 7 members, I believe 5 of them were people that I had asked to serve on that commission because nobody else here was interested in asking some of their people to serve. So we finally got it, but by the time that we formed the commission and you might say got underway during that year that it took us to do this, federal funding then became I guess you might say the pan dried up real good. But by this time then enough interest had occurred, especially with the members of the Housing Commission, because they were very enthused about this project. So they kept, what shall I say, pressing the issue also, and to end up with a long story short, was that we ended up funding Ellen Terrace out of our own local government. So the city of Northville is who funded Ellen Terrace. We did not then go or receive any state or federal funding. So therefore, we could set our own rules and regulations for Ellen Terrace. And as it turned out, it's been a very, very nice project. Last night when I was up there for the 10th anniversary, some of those people who've been there all that time just swear by the place. They just telling me how wonderful it was, and several of them commented, say, Paul, you really did a lot of work on getting this going, and like they told us, it takes more than one person. It finally took the council and the housing commission to get together, and you know, when you have cooperation, you can accomplish a lot.
Would you recall for us the names of the other persons serving on that commission?
Remember, there was John Stewart, Nancy Schultz. Boy, oh boy. Isn't this terrible? I should be able to name every one of those, but well, it seems like time is taking me a bit of a memory also. I could look them up. That would be no problem. I could look up the original members of that.
It will come to you as
yes.
We continue talking. But tell us then about you were able to get funds just by, was it a bond issue? Or
yes. It was a bond issue that the city was able to get passed by the State of Michigan Municipal Finance Commission, and we sold the bonds, and this is how we were able to build the present structure.
Mm-hmm.
And we, of course, hope to add on to it now because they have approximately 120 residents, although there's 100 rooms. And of course, you know, some husband and wife combinations or couples are there. And so, total capacity, like I say, is about 120 people up there. But gosh, we could fill another 100 units immediately. If we had 100 units available right now, today, we could fill it.
I feel sure that's true. And I live in Northville Township, and I'm not eligible for it.
you're eligible for it, but
I'm low on the priority.
Low on the priority list, right. First criteria, of course, is city residence, and then the longevity of those persons, the ones that's been here the longest, move the highest up the ladder. And so consequently, this is how we were able to fill it. Now, when we first started, of course, we did not have that many people in the city that wanted to, you know, move in there. And so we were, let's say, three or four categories down the list, and was able to open it up to other residents other than city. And but now it's to the point where we have so many city residents that would like to be in there that the other categories are kind of low on the priority list.
Well, it certainly has been very successful, and it's had a fine director. I spent 200 hours there one summer volunteering to as part of a degree requirement in Karen Townsend. So I work closely with Fran Milcom. She does a fine job.
Yes, we're very pleased with her. Been pleased with her since the day that she came to volunteer us.
Oh, all right. You said in here that you were on the original beautification committee. Would you like to talk about that? Well, I think I have some notes here.
What does it say now?
Beautification.
Oh, I was. I did one of the original beautification projects. I was never on the commission.
Oh.
If I
so what stated, project did you do?
Okay. That was the planting of the oak barrels in Northfield City with the evergreen trees. And that was a project that I started. I contacted a liquor company out of New York, and they had a warehouse here in Detroit, and I was able to obtain the oak whiskey barrels from them for this project. They donated all the boards for the project. And I would go down to Detroit with my own car and trailer, bring the barrels out here, and at first I was cutting them up myself, but that got to be a pretty large project, so I went to the high school and talked to the shop teacher, and they thought it would be a great project for their younger class students. So I took the first barrel up there, showed them basically, you know, just cut them in half and try to keep them as even as possible to cut, and then we stained them, a redwood stain. And they also did that for me. And this became a class project for them, which the school, of course, gave the kids in class, you know, credits on doing the barrels. It helped me to help beautify the city streets. And then I went out to Green Ridge Nursery and said, hey, I've got to have some little evergreen trees that will fit in these barrels. And how much are you going to charge me for these, and they will be distributed in the city? Well, it turned out that the whole barrel filled with dirt, because we filled the dirt right there at Green Ridge Nursery, and John Miller was very enthused about that project, and so he was even out there with a shovel with me, shoveling dirt into the barrels, and we put the evergreen trees in them, and I believe the little trees were about $13, I think it was, the very first ones, the first year that we were able to do that, the We were able to sell those barrels complete with the tree, and I would deliver them to the merchants, again with my own car and trailer and the help of John Miller out of Green Ridge to load them. And they were $13.50 for the merchant. And by the time we finished up town, which was the following year, the cost of the trees had gone up, and I believe the last ones that we sold the merchants were about $16.50 or $17.
That's a very reasonable figure for a lot of atmosphere.
Oh yes, the merchants were very, very pleased with having those out in front there. And of course I emphasized to them that they had to be watered. And if you don't water them, you know, they're going to die. And of course I had old stuff in the bottom of the barrels and some stones in the bottom to keep moisture down there and to keep them from being, you know, overwatered in case of a severe rain. And that was a very worthwhile project. I enjoyed it. It took a lot of time, a lot of work. My daughter at that time used to go with me to take and do what she could to help. And she used to shovel dirt too when she was quite small, you might say, 20 years ago. She was only about 8-9 years old at the time. She had her little shovel there that she was shoveling dirt. That was Teresa, my oldest daughter. And like you say, with the help of John Miller at the Green Ridge Nursery, John has done quite a number of projects in the Norfolk area at a very reasonable cost to help beautify the city of Norfolk. And so we were able to get the job done. Our extra cost, of course, was the redwood stain and some paint brushes that, of course, I bought for the school. And that was all figured into the cost of the tree and layer there. And as a matter of fact, here's the, well, that's not the one right here. This is the letter that B. Carlson, who was the first chairman of the Beautification Commission here in Northville, sent me.
That's very nice. Very nice. I'm sure you're proud of that.
Oh yes, very much so. That's the reason I keep it right here on the wall in front of my desk today. Thought that was very nice of her to send me that letter.
One of the things you mentioned is that you have worked for Northville Downs.
Yes.
For a long time. Would you like to talk about that?
Well, Northville Downs started in 1944, and I've worked there ever since.
Is that right?
Yeah.
In what capacity?
Well, when I first started out, I worked during the daytime for the sports service, taking and going throughout the grandstand, picking up the empty bottles of, you know, from the beer and pop that they sold. Back then there was no such thing as, you know, cups serving in it. You just bought the bottle of beer or a bottle of pop at the racetrack, and that's what you got. So I used to clean up just the bottles, because the Downs, of course, had their own sweepers to, you know, clean up the rest of it. And then I had to stack all those, and then after I got that job done, first thing in the morning, well then the next thing I would start on would be cleaning out of the refreshment stands, and then loading the tanks back up with the beer and pop for that next evening's sale. And of course I'd ice them down. Well then after that would be going back into the commissary and getting all of the hot dogs and the hot dog buns, and we used to have to do it, you might say, in steps, because there's so many things that you had to do for that day to get prepared, so we would do it in steps like that. And so by the time we ended up in the early afternoon, we'd have all our bottles picked up, stacked, put up on the shelves, you might say. The refreshment stand's all ready for next night. Well, then, by that time, I would be through, and the next thing I would do would be go down to the program department, and they would supply me with, close to 100 programs. And I used to go through the barn area in the early afternoon then and sell that evening's programs to the horsemen who would like to see what was going to go on that night. And, of course, I was paid a commission of 5 cents per program. And so that kept me pretty busy. Well, by the time
you must have been pretty young to have been satisfied with that.
Well, take back 44 years, that puts me down into the category of about 13 to 14 years old at that time. And so after I got through selling the programs, then I'd go home and have some dinner. And then I'd come back to work at the racetrack at night in the parking lot, parking cars. And so that again would keep me busy throughout the early evening. Well, by the time I got through parking cars at night, I was pretty tired because I'd have to be down there to work at the commissary for the sports service by 7 o'clock in the morning. So there wasn't too much time between the time I get out of work close to 11 o'clock at night and 7 o'clock the next morning. So during the summer months, or other than, of course, Sundays, I was pretty well occupied working, because I had actually 3 different jobs that I did, in those first few years. Well, then eventually I went to work really, you might say, full time, during racing time, that is, in the parking lot only. I gave up the support service work. I did keep the programs for an extra couple of years, and then I was put out on one of the parking lot gates handling and collecting for the parking when I was, it was either 15 or 16, and I was on the gates taking in money. And then I stayed on that job for several years, and then they moved me from there to a gate job, which was a gate leading to the barn area and to the paddock area at nights, which was a, you might really consider it a security job, checking people for their passes going in and out of the barn area, and making sure that, undesirables did not get into the barns or into the paddock area. Of course, the drivers, once they went in to race their horses at night, if they came back out, I had to make sure that they removed their colors, just things of that nature. I was on that job for quite a few years, enjoyed it tremendously. And then they moved me over to another gate when things, of course, were changed around, which was fine. Again, that was a gate between the grandstand area then and the paddock area. And I remained on that job in the admissions department up until today, which, although I have no longer worked on the gates now for probably close to 10 years, because since then I've handled the dock seat reservations and the box seat sales of, season boxes, and then I handle the daily sales each night. Mm-hmm. And I have really enjoyed doing that. It's a change of pace for my day work. Of course, if I get appointments to go out on insurance sales, or if I have city council meetings, or anything like that, I, of course, do not work that evening at the track, because after all, my insurance business is my number one.
It's your bread and butter job.
Bread and butter job, right. The other job is a fun job. I've enjoyed it. I've seen the operation of this racetrack go from where they said that at one time they hoped that they could build it up to a $25,000 a night handle. And of course today it's several hundred thousand dollars per night handle. So I've seen the track grow from infancy to what the total racing industry is today, because back at that time there was only the old Detroit race course, which had the runners, and Northville Downs, which had the standard bred trotters and pacers. And other than that, the only place that you seen trotters and pacers were at county fairs, where they raced, but not for the state monies that they race today. And that is becoming a multi-million-dollar business today with the amount of tracks that we have in the state of Michigan.
Do you follow racing generally, out of state and around the country?
I enjoy reading about them, in the newspapers, and of course when the big races like the Hamiltonian and the Ohio Fraternities and the Michigan Fraternity States, I enjoy reading about those and the horses that are coming up. I always love to watch the 2 and 3 year old colts race, because after all they were the future of the racing industry, just like our children are the future of our nation. And so I always enjoyed watching the babies, you might say, and see how they did the following year and the year after that, and how some of them became grand champions. A lot of people here in the Northville area have had real good horses. Of course, some of them are still standing, but still today, some of the fortune that Spencer's had was a tremendous horse. Les Alford out of Flint had some great horses, some of the best raced up in New York State. Perry Williams out of Birmingham had excellent horses. So the Michigan area has been well represented in the standard bred horse racing throughout the entire country.
That's very interesting. You mentioned in here that you have been a past president and board member of the Northville Community Chamber of Commerce.
Yes.
When were you president?
Okay, the years, just a minute, let me. I was the president of the chamber for 2 years, the year of 1979 and the year of 1980. And prior to that, I was a board member appointed in 78 to fill a term of one of the board members who had to leave. And we had the International Festival at the Northville Downs back in those days, and they asked me to, how I got on the board was that they had come to me and asked me about taking the food concession at the festival, because my wife and I had been able to, what shall I say, put on a few dinners and cater a few banquets or what have you not back in those days, because of my, let's say, cooking history of my sweet shop days. So we did. It turned out to be a profitable food concession form that year, which is something that the chamber had not had in previous years with other people running the food concession. And so then the following following year, they elected me president of the chamber. And at that time, the chamber really was not, what should I say, recognized. One guy said, well, this is just nothing more than a formality to go to the meetings and have the president say, well, I did this and did that during this last month, and now I need your approval. And one of the things that I said at the very first meeting was that this was going to be a board of 7 members and 7 ideas and 7, what shall I say, speeches would be given at each meeting. And if I felt that I was only the one of the 7 members, and the only difference between me and them was that I would preside at the meetings. But I wanted ideas, I wanted thoughts, I wanted work from the other 6 members also. And I think we had a very, very good working board. They were all very enthused. I was very enthused with the members. And we started out to become a very viable part of the community. When the Main Street 78 project was rejected by the voters in Northville, I went to City Council on behalf of my chamber board and asked if we could not take over that project. At that time, I was not on the City Council. I had been prior to that. Main Street 78 came about from the fact that when I was on City Council, up to 78, I believe it was, they asked me to sit.